kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I didn't die between Tuesday and today, so I guess I'm doing fine.
That is a positive.
Yeah, you gotta have that low bar for success. And then it's just like, nailed it. Took a breath. Got it. Take another one. Fuck yeah.
Hooray.
Hi, breathe three times in a row.
I have cardboard sitting behind my chair because we cut off some little barricades so the cats couldn't get to, like, my Rock Band guitar or the cables underneath the desk. And now they're just attacking the cardboard on the floor behind me.
Yeah, that sounds about right. We got, we ordered a spare arm for the dishwasher. I got the worst dishwasher in the world. And, like, every couple of months, the spare arm just flies off, gets stuck on the heating element, and tries to burn the place down.
Nice.
And then I got to go buy a new one. I'm glad they're cheap, but I'm still really fucking tired of replacing them. And I don't know why they haven't just recalled this fucking dishwasher.
Wow.
Yeah. So, like, I had to order a new one because it flew off, got burnt, fun. And it came today, and it was, like, in this really weird, long-ass shaped box, right? Like, I've ordered easels that haven't come in boxes like this. But it was long and slender. Like, you could fit one of those thin-ass Christmas trees in it. But it was for a spare arm for the dishwasher.
Interesting.
And I had it sitting in the rocking chair. I'd opened it, took spare arm out. I already popped it in. I did that shit myself. I'm a broke as fuck, and I can do that. it's that easy, thankfully. But as soon as I come back through, Castiel is laying in that box. Now, I had it sitting vertically. And this cat is literally laying on his head with his ass going up the box. So, like, he's doing a headstand and he's sitting there half asleep already. And to be young and flexible again, you know? Because all I could think of was, if I even thought about laying in such a position, you would just go ahead and have to put me in a hole. But there he was.
You said to be young and flexible again. I wouldn't know about the flexible part. I would only know about being young.
I used to be, like, super sporty. I went hiking and I did kickboxing in college.
Hmm.
Yeah. Now I'm just like, I sit in a chair and can't move.
But you play video games.
I'm very good at playing video games.
You are.
Root Beer is over here cosplaying as Ian, making fun of how I say dishwasher. I'm glad Ian ain't here to pick up on that one yet.
For the longest time, I thought you were talking about a spare arm and not a sprayer arm.
Sprayer?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I guess I could see how that would happen. Spare. Sprayer.
Yeah.
Sprayer.
Good times.
It's kind of like how I say shower, power, and hour. Instead of shower, power, and hour. Yeah.
We're just getting through the greatest hits of weird things that you say.
Good old Rednickia.
Rednickia. Man, I'm still not ready to do the show again.
No?
I enjoyed our time off.
Do we have a lot of shit to talk about this week, or are we speedrunning? Are we starting this off with speedruns?
No, we got a lot of news we got to take. Okay. I mean, there's been 3 weeks of news.
That's true. And also today, there was a lot of shit dropped today.
A lot of shit happened today, but let's get to the older stuff first. Okay. I'm just going to go in order of how I wrote this shit down on my list. I don't know what's most timely and what isn't, but some games left Game Pass.
Uh-huh.
And as of now, they're pretty much already gone with Just Cause 3 and Lego City Undercover, both departing the service.
Yeah.
And then they showed a couple of more games are going to be leaving by the end of the month.
Yes.
With Resident Evil 4, The Division, Tomb Raider Definitive Edition, Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor Game of the Year Edition, and Saints Row the Third from the Xbox 360.
Okay. Yeah, I knew The Division was going to be gone again. So I expect Aki will start messaging me on Xbox like, yeah, you ready to play that yet? You ready? Can we play that now?
Yeah. Not all departures, though, as there were a couple of games that were added. Console on the 9th got Frostpunk Console Edition and so Sword Art Online Fatal Bullet. And then on the 16th, they got Tekken 7.
Does Frostpunk on PC have achievements?
No clue.
Might not stop me anyway. I think I only got one or two achievements playing on Xbox. It's fucking hard.
Nothing will stop you from playing them.
No, it's a problem.
Yeah. And then a PC Game Pass got a couple of games added to it with A Plague Tale Innocence, Grease, and Children of Morta, which is apparently also playable on Xbox One Game Pass.
Indeed. Children of Morta is very good, and I would definitely recommend it. I'm looking forward to playing Grease. I've been mulling over it because, like, I don't want to start the habit of buying games on the Switch for me to play. I don't have that kind of time to develop a backlog on yet another platform. But I really wanted to play it. And so now I get a chance. Yay!
Yay! Hooray!
Somewhere. I'll fit it in somewhere. Some way, somehow. But yeah. Forgot what else I was going to say about that. So there we are.
Probably
I'm going
to
play
important.
Grease. I'll probably play Frostpunk yet a fucking again. And I think everybody should play Children of Morta.
I will have to. That's a game that's been on my backlog that I really wanted to get to, and I just haven't gotten there yet.
Mm-hmm.
I blame the fact that I'm still not used to this headset that I'm using.
That's a lame excuse.
Yeah, but it's all I got, so I'm running with it.
Gonna run it right into the ground.
Seriously, have you ever used the headset for so long and then you switched and it doesn't sound anything like it used to and it's throwing you off really badly?
Yeah, I just do that when I switch back and forth between the rigs and the Lucid Sounds every day.
Why do you switch between them?
That way I don't have to unplug them from the Xbox to the PC. So like I just use the rigs on the PC and the Lucid Sounds on the Xbox. Yeah, so when I'm, like, switching back and forth, I'm just startled by, like, the way things sound different. And I'd be like, ah, wasn't ready.
Yeah, I miss my other headphones.
Rip. Are you going to replace them, or are you just going to let them be gone?
I don't know. I'm using the Turtle Beach headset that I used to use for Xbox gaming. Like, my microphone is still the same, so there's no difference there. The difference is just what I'm hearing in my head.
Yeah.
The voices in my head are slightly different.
Do I sound better or worse?
Everything sounds different. It's not necessarily better or worse. It's just different. Like, there's S's are more pronounced in my headset now, and they weren't before. So it's just, like, bothering me.
Oh, S's.
Yes.
So I should say all the words that start with the letter S.
I mean, if you really want to. But speaking of the letter S, the PS5 logo was revealed, and surprise, surprise, it looks like the PS4 logo, but with a 5 instead.
And then everybody was so fucking excited. Xbox is sitting over here going, like, we showed you the whole fucking console, and what do you want from us?
I'm getting worried. The mock-ups that they're showing with the inputs on the back of the Series X.
Oh, on the Xbox. I don't know.
Yeah, the Series X, the inputs that apparently it has, apparently they are not going to have the HDMI in.
I hope they don't drop that. Because
that is
actually
a huge detriment if they get rid of the HDMI in for me. Like, that was going to go from our new living room centerpiece to now I might just get one for my room.
Yeah. I will say, I only recently brought it to number one's attention that her Xbox had an HDMI in. And I don't know why, but for some reason she had convinced herself that the Switch could only be connected to her sister's TV because it's a smart TV. And since her TV is not a smart TV, it couldn't play the Switch. I don't know what in the fuck made her think that, but that's where she was.
Okay.
And I was like, no, that's not true. You can use it on your TV too. Because she's been taking, they go to bed before she does, so she takes it into her room and then plays it after they're in bed. But she's just been using the dock to charge it. She didn't know she could hook it up to her TV and play it like they were doing. I was like, for real?
Are you going to have to buy a whole bunch of extra docks so that you can hook it up to a bunch of different TVs at the same time?
At least one more would probably be a good idea. That way they can just, interchange it between rooms. But the interesting thing, the reason I brought that up, was that when I was telling her, I was like, you can dock it to your TV. What are you doing? And I was like, for that matter, she was like, oh, well, do I have to unplug my Xbox? I was like, fucking no, just plug it into the HDMI in on the Xbox. She's like, I can do that. I was like, yeah. Plug the HDMI cord into the back of the Xbox, turn on your TV, and let it go. And she was like, oh my God, I had no idea. I was like, child, you want to be an engineer. What are you doing with your life? I have failed you.
I'm getting really worried that the Series X isn't going to have HDMI in, because we actually use the HDMI in with our cable box.
They did say that that wasn't an official approved.
Yeah.
And I would say something like that is probably not nailed down quite yet.
I hope.
So, it seems like it would be awful early for that to be set in stone.
I would hate to see them get rid of the HDMI in and then it just turns into another console.
Yeah.
Like, I don't play my 360, I don't play my PS4, because I have to switch inputs like a pleb.
Uh-huh.
I can't just hit the guide button on my controller and select games to browse while watching TV. I have to completely change inputs, I have to power on a different console, I have to grab a different controller. It is so much more work when I could just play something on the Xbox One the way it is.
Yeah.
So hopefully they don't get rid of HDMI in. Fingers crossed.
I am a little concerned that all of the heat, the Xbox One was marketed as like the end all be all entertainment box for your living room.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a fine way to market it, because I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, I one want
thing
that.
On my, yeah, one thing on my desk and I'm done. I'm good. But of course the hardcores were like, well, with this shit, we just want to play games. And I worry that the powers that be at Xbox hear that kind of backlash from the hardcore and then forget that there really are hardcore players who still enjoy those other aspects and want it to be an all-in-one entertainment device. There's a huge value to me. I have a smart TV. I don't ever fuck with the apps on it because everything's on my Xbox. Me neither.
Exactly.
I get up in the morning, I press the button on my Xbox controller, it turns on my TV, it turns on my Xbox, and I can do whatever I want all day from just the controller. And I don't have to worry about anything else. That's a huge plus for me. Mm-hmm. So I hope that they don't, think that there was so much backlash that they have to backpedal on that. And make it basically a glorified Xbox and not a all-in-one type of system that can handle everything.
Yeah, that would suck.
Like, I can see the argument behind it,
I can too. I just don't want to acknowledge it. I would rather have it
convenient to me.
I would rather have it be the way it is now.
If I'm using a smart TV app, right? And I'm watching Netflix and my friend comes on the Xbox, I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
But now I sit here as it is. Like, if I'm sitting here watching TV and Studa pops on in the middle of the day, which is an unusual time for him, but hey, sometimes he has a long lunch. And, he's ready to play Rocket League or a couple games of Call of Duty before he goes back to work. I wouldn't know if I wasn't, sitting there watching YouTube or Netflix or Hulu on the Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
But as it is, like, he pops on and I go, oh, shit, Studa. And then I turn off whatever I'm doing and immediately go play with him. And then when he leaves, I go back to what I was doing.
Yep.
I don't want to have to switch inputs, wait to see if he remembers to send a fucking Facebook text.
See if that system has an update that you didn't know about.
Yeah, like I just like to know what's going on with my console so that it's ready when I want it to be ready.
Goddamn right.
Yeah. I'll fuck that up.
Yeah.
Okay, carry on. Next.
did you hear WWE 2K20 had a fantastic bug?
A lot of them.
This one related to the New Year's DLC that came out.
Oh, my God. Why are they still even doing anything for this game? They just should just say we're sorry.
Well, the problem was it would crash the game whenever it was played in the year 2020. The only way to fix it.
It was 2K, but too late.
Yeah, the only way to fix it was to revert your system's console date back to sometime in 2019 and continue playing. I mean, they've since patched the game, and that issue has been taken care of. I mean, there's still tons of other issues the game has that Lord knows they're never going to fix. But this one problem was addressed.
They really need to give it the ET treatment and just find a hole in Arizona.
Yeah. So yeah, they fucked up the game so bad that it crashed on the year that was advertised on the packaging.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, like, what if you were playing it right at the stroke of midnight? Because it was the new year, and you're like, yeah, playing WWE, which is your own fuck up anyway. Yeah, playing on New Year's. They say what you're doing on New Year's is what you're going to do for the rest of the year. No game.
Oh, shit.
Holy mackerel.
Root beer is my jam dropping.
Root beer, what are you doing?
2020 biddies. If that doesn't call for a long one, I don't know what does. George, take it away.
Dropping bits! All over your fucking face! Wet pancakes!
Wet pancakes indeed. Holy crap. Thank you so much for those biddies. That woke me up.
That made the little bar move.
That did make the bar move. We're at 54%. Holy shit.
You know what I'm going to do while we're doing this? I'm going to eat a Cadbury cream egg.
Going to eat a Cadbury cream egg.
Not sponsored. Yeah.
I wish we were sponsored.
I'd be sponsored by Cadbury cream eggs. I'd be like, fuck yeah. You don't even got to pay me in money. You could pay me in cream eggs.
We are sponsored by Root Beer's My Jam right now.
We are. Root Beer, this egg's for you. For you. That went down wrong. I wasn't ready.
Oh my god. What is wrong with us?
I got another egg to go to.
How many I'll eggs do you have? You're not sharing anything with me?
Nope. I had three. Down. I ate one earlier. Fuck it. I eat another one.
Damn.
It's funny because our little gas station here in our town, for whatever reason, they always have Cadbury cream eggs in January. And it's like the best part of mid-January, because that's when the Cadbury cream eggs start coming out. And I'm just like, fuck yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm the only person that buys them. And I'm also pretty sure they're leftovers from last year. Don't care. They're still good. They're not white, so they're fine.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, yeah. Speaking of eggs, yeah. Untitled Goose Game has sold over 1 million copies to date.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, wow. Over 1 million.
That game. I'll be talking about it later. I won't say anything right now.
Yeah, we'll talk about that eventually.
That's good, though, to see that. Is that just, that's on everything?
Yeah, that's right? Total sales.
Okay.
And that was like 3 weeks ago, so I'm sure it's only gone up since then. Because also in the time that we were off, Enter the Gungeon sold over 3 million copies to date, and they announced that Exit the Gungeon will be hitting PC and consoles early this year.
Fucking yes. I was so mad. I was so mad about Exit the Gungeon being only on Apple Arcade. I was like, the fuck is this garbage?
Well, you knew it would be a timed thing.
Yeah. I was just worried it would be like a long time timed thing.
Yeah.
So to find out that it's coming that quickly, I was like, whew, unnecessarily bad. Okay, my egg is gone.
Your egg is gone. Mm-hmm. Something that is not gone are the 5 million units that the PlayStation VR has sold to date.
That is about 4.5 million more than I expected.
It's actually less than I expected. With like over 100 million systems sold, to hear that they're only at like 5% adoption rate.
Yeah.
That's not very good numbers for VR.
I wonder what their expectation was of how close reality is to that.
I don't know. I honestly would have expected that they sold more than 5% worth of their audience. I bet
they were hoping to as well.
Yeah. It's just shocking number. I don't know. I mean, good for the 5 million who picked one up. It's fun. It's just limited.
I think price is one of the big hiccups to it.
It's been coming down in price, too. I think you could get them for like $300 now.
Yeah, but you could just get a whole Xbox One S for $220. True. Or during Black Friday, you could get them for $149. So.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of PlayStation.
Two Xboxes for one PlayStation VR.
Well, I mean, you don't need two more Xboxes.
Says who?
Me.
You're wrong.
Listen, you only need a spare Xbox if you have Rock Band, because it crashes your other console.
I was about to say, exactly how many do you have compared to the number of people in your house?
Well, I am a rare commodity.
But, they use something, all right.
Speaking of PlayStation, the PlayStation Plus lineup for January came out just after we went off the air last year. PlayStation Plus is getting Goat Simulator and Uncharted the Nathan Drake Collection.
Have they not had Goat Simulator before?
Nope.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, now they got it. And kudos. Uncharted.
I know jack shit about Uncharted.
They're fun action games.
Like, I would recognize Nathan Drake, like, in a lineup. I'd be like, yeah, that's another generic brown-haired white dude. Keep going. But that's the extent of my knowledge of Uncharted. As far as I'm aware, it's like Tomb Raider, but with a dick.
Yeah, close.
Yeah, okay.
More gunplay, too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as a reminder, Games with Gold for January, Xbox One got Styx, Shard of Darkness, and Batman the Telltale series, while Xbox 360 got Tekken 6 and Lego Star Wars 2, the original trilogy. Kind of neck and neck month. I guess I would give the edge slightly to PlayStation because they're getting 4 games instead of 2 with Uncharted.
Yeah.
Including 1, 2, and 3.
But it's an older game, though, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, they were all PS3 games, and technically Goat Sim was a PS3 game as well, wasn't it?
Yep.
So,
it was, because I know the girls had it on 360.
Nothing huge for either of the platforms, but hey, free games are free games, right?
Yep. Sounds like January.
Yeah, pretty much. Some bad news. Fantasy Flight Interactive, the creators of the Lord of the Rings adventure card game, is shutting down. Asmodee Digital says that they will continue to support the game servers, and the definitive edition of the game will release on consoles in early 2020. This is the one that the Stealth launched onto Game Pass a couple of months back.
Yeah, I remember this.
And now the company go bye-bye. I believe so.
Hmm. Interesting. But
disappointing to hear of a company getting shut down.
Yeah, it always sucks.
I have Jelly attempting to climb my leg. Ow. Ow. Jelly has successfully climbed my leg.
Well done, Jelly. Well done. Oh, for the record, Castiel is doing fine after his misadventure the other day. He's back to tearing shit up like his good old normal self.
That's good.
Yeah, he's good.
A bunch of news from today, actually. A lot of delays. A lot of shit just got delayed this week.
I want to point out that Devolver Digital tweeted a little while ago that if they didn't get 2 million followers, they were going to cancel all video games. And then today, the funnier part was, and I'm going to spoil what you're about to announce, got delayed, but they said in the original tweet, it says we're going to cancel all video games, including Cyberpunk. And then today, they retweeted that with the comment, told ya.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Whoever their social media is just nailing it.
Yeah, but it is true. Cyberpunk 2077 has been delayed all the way to September 17th. So from April to September.
Wow. That's a pretty lengthy delay. But a delayed game is eventually good. A rushed one is always garbage.
Yeah.
So, you know, let it go. Oh my God, Daddy, that could be adorable.
Yep, and attacking also my shoulder.
Making bread on your shoulder. So I mean, I'd rather see it delayed, give them the time to play test it without crunching over it. It's far better to do it that way.
It's not the only delay though, as the Avengers game got delayed to September 4th as well.
Did it?
Yep.
Keep forgetting that's a thing.
Yeah, that's the one that kind of snuck through the cracks because also getting delayed. Final Fantasy VII Remake has been delayed 1 month down to April 10th. So that's not that bad, but still a bummer to see a delay on that so close to release.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Three big delays, though, in 1 week. Three big delays.
It was a pretty harsh one, yeah.
Yeah.
The funny part is that I play nothing but indies pretty much, so I was just like, yeah, okay, don't care.
Well, speaking play of the indies, anyway. Sea of Solitude is now a part of EA Access.
Oh, I recommend it. I loved it. It was a good game.
I picked that one up on sale, and I've yet to play it.
Do it.
The new character for Smash Brothers was announced today, and after all the speculation being like, Dante from Devil May Cry or whoever
I would have been so sad if it had been Dante, because I am such an avid Dante fan that I would have had to fucking bought Smash.
Well, the good news is it's not Dante. The bad news is it's not Dante. It's a Byleth from Fire Emblem Three Houses is the final character in the first expansion pack for Smash Brothers Ultimate. He is also the 8th Fire Emblem character, which I think is pretty crazy.
Yes.
Why not just make Fire Emblem needs that many people.
Just make a Fire Emblem brawler at this point and be done with it.
I mean, they already have the Fire Emblem style Dynasty Warriors game.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, like, they could just leave the Fire Emblem guys out. We have enough.
I thought it was going to be Cuphead, because there was quite a resurgence of like Cuphead Smash cross up fan art all over my timeline today. And I was like, I don't know who these people are or why this is being retweeted, but I'm assuming Cuphead is going to be added to Smash.
No, Cuphead is actually going to be one of the new Mii Fighter costumes. They have costumes that you could buy for the Mii characters in the game.
Yeah.
And they're going to have Altair from Assassin's Creed, the Rabbids, Mega Man X and Mega Man EXE. And then Cuphead is going to be an outfit that you could buy for Mii Fighters. And if you buy the Cuphead costume, you get a new music track as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And all of that will be available on the 28th. And then they also confirmed that an additional 6 fighters are going to be coming in yet another fighter pack, which will again go on sale on the 28th.
And 5 of them will be from Fire Emblem.
Probably. Probably.
Excuse me. Woo!
And then a last big bit of news I have is that PlayStation once again will not be participating in E3 2020. What do you think of this? With the PlayStation 5 coming out, do you think it's smart to skip E3 again?
I mean, they don't need that kind of hype. But it is kind of like a bit of a snub. A lot of people do look to E3 and all the hype that's around it to, like, you know, get a sneak peek. And I'm sure they'll probably do some kind of like individual conference type thing, but I don't know. It loses a little bit of its luster.
No.
I don't remember watching their thing at all last year. And usually I at least watch for a sneak peek of Call of Duty, and I was like, nah, I'm good.
Well, they didn't have a conference last year.
No, but like they did some big state of play thing, right?
That's what
you mean. And so like even then I was just like, meh.
It's just not the same not being at E3. And I think with the new console coming out, you kind of have to be there to get.
You know, I was just about to say, it's an interesting strategy because that means Xbox is going to undeniably dominate the news cycle during the course of E3.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, on one hand, they can go, well, hey, we don't have to share it because we're not fighting Xbox and PlayStation articles. And then if we wait and do a conference on our own, we dominate that news cycle. But there's something to be said for, you know, putting your shit out there. And if it's supposed to be such this amazing knock your socks off console, show it to us. Show what are you doing?
Part of me wonders if Sony's just waiting for Microsoft to announce what they want to announce just so Sony could be like, oh yeah, well ours is this instead.
Yeah.
Kind of like they did all with the PS4. It's like, oh, well, Xbox announced that you can't do this. Well, we're going to announce that you can do this. They announced it costs this much. We're going to announce it costs this much.
Yeah, it is, I don't know, maybe effective, but I don't know that I particularly care for it as a strategy.
It seems like Sony is just reacting to what everyone else does.
Yeah, that's not good for innovation.
Nope. But this is Sony, who pride themselves on innovation that everyone else has created first.
You're not wrong, but I didn't want to be the one to throw that shade out there.
Of course you did.
Because I shit on Sony a lot.
You do.
And I don't want anybody to be like, I listen to your show. Like, of the two people that listen, No Time and Root Beer, I don't want somebody to suddenly just be like, well, I'd listen if that squeaky-voiced little boy didn't always shit on PlayStation. And then I have to be like, well, there's a Patreon dollar we lost because I couldn't keep my mouth shut.
Oh, Lord.
Shout out to No Time and Root Beer, though. They're so consistent.
They are. I love having them here every week. Bitties helps, too. Very appreciated, though. I can't get over that. That was a ridiculous donation. Thank you again for that. Wet pancakes all the way, especially because wet pancakes is our new Twitch emote, which has been approved.
Yeah.
So we got that. What else happened in the time that we've been gone?
Because
that's all the news I got. I'm not sure.
League had an update today, and I didn't even bother to check the patch notes on it. I'm just like, well, I'm sure it's a thing, and I'll play it. Matter what the patch notes say, I'm probably going to play it anyway. So.
Root Beer is My Jam says E3 is an outdated concept and there's no reason for it. It was created for media and distributors for an age of magazines, catalogs, and newspapers. I can agree with that, but I think it still has a place in society today.
Yeah.
I think it's still the best yearly event to get your news and your big announcements out for the year.
Oh, celebrate the Lunar New Year with Lucky Lanterns on January 20th. That's new.
What, that Rocket League? Patch.
Yeah. So Lucky Lanterns begins January 20th at 10 a.m. Pacific time and ends February 10th at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And then you will earn red envelopes as your currency to get you some goodies.
Mm.
They didn't used to do these events quite so back to back. I'm a little surprised. And I'm going to assume that's that Epic money.
Maybe.
Not particularly mad about it. All the dragon stuff looks cool. I'm down for it. Yeah.
The cats are just going crazy with this cardboard behind me. I don't think the mic's picking up any of it, but they are just attacking each other nonstop. Oh. Good old kitties.
So, mine are asleep.
Anything you want to talk about, or should we just dive into some reviews?
I think we can dive. We're good. Yeah.
We shall dive. We'll get our diving commenced. We do have a handful of games to talk about this week. The first one is Untitled Goose Game, developed by House House, published by Panic. It released December 17th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99, also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. It's a lovely day in the village, and you are a horrible goose. Cole, tell us about Untitled Goose Game.
Wow, that was quite a summary there.
Yeah.
That might have been the shortest summary ever.
Short and sweet. I love them like that.
It was like four words. And the interesting thing about that is I think we've reached a point where Untitled Goose Game might be one of those games that needs no introduction.
Pretty much.
It's just kind of permeated the meta at this point. And it's just the thing. It's like it's always existed. So you do play as an unruly asshole of a goose. And your entire job is just to basically torment all of the people around you. You can't be mad at that. There are days where you play games and you've got to, depending on the type of player you are, you're solving puzzles, you're putting down hardcore strategies, you're trying to break speedrun records, you're playing PvP and trying to outrace somebody or shoot them in the head faster. And then there are days where you just want to sit back, put your feet up, and steal the gardener's keys. And Untitled Goose Game will let you torment the fuck up out that gardener.
Poor gardener.
You're going to steal his keys. You're going to get him wet. There are multiple ways to do everything on your to-do list. Why the duck has a piece of paper in a to-do list, I'm not entirely sure. I don't think anybody knows, but it works. You have your to-do list, and as you accomplish those things on your list, sometimes it can be super simple, like put together a picnic, and then you just got to go steal the items from the area to put together a picnic. Sometimes they're a little more in depth, like knock off a kid's glasses and then make him put on the wrong pair. You have to kind of think about how to accomplish what you're doing, but not in such a way that you can't kind of just accidentally do it while being a dick. How much effort you put into Untitled Goose Game is entirely up to you. I like to liken the game to Goat Simulator, but with feathers.
Good way to put it.
Because for the longest time, Goat Simulator was number 3's most favorite game in the world. She loved it. And she loved it specifically because she could just wander around and be an asshole with no consequences.
Root Beer, imagine if the goose was fighter in Smash. That would be amazing.
I'm a little surprised that hasn't happened yet.
That would be amazing.
Or in Rivals of Aether.
Honk.
So, given that that was her favorite way to play, like, Goat Simulator, it was no surprise whatsoever when I handed her the controller for Untitled Goose Game, and she immediately set about just finding ways to torment people.
Nice.
Like, the more miserable she made them, she somehow glitched it so that the gardener was, like, permanently stuck in the water hose's path. And was just drowning and sitting there being all sad because he's stuck in the water the whole time. And she's just going about, she's taking his shit for her picnic. She's, you know, getting his keys and dropping them in the middle of the lake. And I'm sitting here going,
I've raised you well.
Did, but I'm so proud. So proud. Like, way to go, kid. You broke the fuck up out of it so that you can be an asshole without consequences.
Oh, Lord.
So the gardening part, that's only one area. There are multiple areas. I don't want to spoil like any of the later ones. So as you knock off your to-do list, though, you did get to explore more of the town, meet more people, torment them. It was surprisingly lengthy in like how much you could do as a damn goose. I love the art style. It's lineless and cartoonish, but it's not necessarily low poly. One of the biggest things that caught my attention to Untitled Goose Game before it even came out was how much I thought the characters looked like the character models in Ooblets. And I was like, oh, it looks like Ooblets. And here we are, Untitled Goose Game is out, and Ooblets has disappeared into the abyss.
Yeah.
fucking epic though. So it's a charming look. Everything just kind of comes together and works. Like there are times where the art style that Untitled Goose Game uses, like you will see developers try to use that in like a horror game or something. And you're like, no, this just does not work. Don't do this. But for the casual, laid back atmosphere of Untitled Goose Game, it's kind of perfect. I wish that it was just called Goose Game. Because every time I have to say Untitled Goose Game, I want to shorten it to UGG. And then I'm like, no, I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, I just call it Goose Game.
Yeah, and then it's like, and then I'm just guaranteeing, well, at this point, I think it's permeated enough that if you just say Goose Game, somebody types Goose Game into the dashboard, they'd be like, yeah, okay, here's Untitled Goose Game. That's what I'm looking for.
Goose Game, you're going to have to be more specific.
Yeah.
Oh, the Untitled one.
How many Goose Games could there be? Don't dash that, because it's, you know, like something becomes super popular and then there's immediately 900 clones of it.
Yeah.
Like, I bet if we go to the creator section, there's at least one Goose Game knockoff. It's probably like half titled Duck Experiment or something. Experience.
Half-titled Duck Experience.
That's what I bet it would be called. That's what I would call it.
So we know if we see one on the store that it's yours.
Yeah. I can't code games, though, so we're fine. And my duck would probably have a dick.
Oh, Lord. On that note, $20 on Untitled Goose Game. What are you thinking on it?
I think in general, I would normally say that's a bit of a high price tag, you know? But given that it is available on Game Pass, I'm a little more inclined to be like, hey, at least you can try it, no problem. I think Untitled Goose Game is great if you're looking for a laugh or something that you can just kind of sit down and play through for a little while and enjoy. If you're looking to knock out the achievements, there are speedrun achievements, and while it's doable, it will make you want to put your head through a wall if you're struggling. And we all know I hate speedrun achievements. Yeah. So that's something to take into consideration. It really boils down to if this is the kind of game for you that you think that you're going to want to sit and complete in one section, like in one sit down. Or if you're going to just like pick it up, play it for a little while, have some fun, and put it down. Because I think it could be far more frustrating if you're sitting there just trying to go for a completion in it than if you're just taking a break and playing it as a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say knowing that it's not going to suit everybody's play style and that, you know, knowing that it can be a little repetitive if you're just trying to like get through it all at once, I'm more inclined to give it like a really recommended try it. I think it's funny. I think it's great, but I also didn't have any motivation to sit down and play it for like 2 hours straight and get all the achievements. Like I just enjoyed it far more. Play for a little while, put it away. Play for a little while, put it away. That's it for kids. That's a good way to keep them busy for an hour.
All right. Well, the next game to talk about is called Regions of Ruin, developed by Vox Games, published by Jandusoft, released January 8th on Xbox One for $9.99. Regions of Ruin is a 2D side-scrolling RPG with town building where you are introduced to an open world that progressively challenges your hero and settlement the further you delve into the vast continent. Cole, tell us about Regions of Ruin.
Here's another short summary. Okay.
Regions wasn't that short. That was 2 lines.
It is when you consider, like, sometimes you give full-on details of, like, all the lore and stuff involved in a game. And Regions of Ruin, it has this intense, heavy lore to it. So I kind of thought you were going to, like, touch on all the talk of the war between the men and the centaurs and how the dwarves went into hiding and now they've come out, and like none of that was mentioned in the summary. And I'm kind of surprised, because the lore is what makes Regions of Ruin a step above. There's so much effort and detail put into it that even if I sat here and like try to give it, Root Beer's mad at me. I'm not saying it's not a buy. I'm just saying there are people who would be like, fuck, after like 4 hours.
Honk.
Yeah, honk. But I don't think I could do Regions of Ruin justice if I tried to just like sit down and give you very detailed explanation of the story. That's something you definitely have to play and pay attention to. That said, if you don't want to focus on that kind of detail, you can skip it and still play the game and be fine. But I do think that the level of detail added to the lore and the narrative that's all wrapped up around it, that it's in depth and you should definitely, you know, check into it. Gameplay wise, you are one of the few surviving dwarves. Your hideaway, like I said, there was war, men, centaurs, boom. Not a whole lot left to the world. The dwarves went into hiding. Eventually they got attacked as well. They didn't have any choice but try to come back out and build the world back up. That's your job. That's who you are. You're a dwarf. You're going to go explore. Everything that you do in Regions of Ruin is dependent upon resources, because at its core, it is a town building simulator. So you are trying to build your town back up. You need to go and rescue other dwarves. You need to find enclaves of dwarves and convince them to join your cause to help build things back up so that they'll provide you with manpower and resources. You need to properly allocate those resources so that you can build necessary structures in your camp. You are very graciously rewarded for exploring. Exploring is a huge aspect of the game. You're given a map, and you can see it on you know the 2D map, and then like you move your cursor around, and it will tell you how much food and other resources you're going to consume to try to get to these places. But if you go and you're able to capture these different locations, then you can get resources back. You can send people to work. Like if it's a farm, for example, you can send somebody there, and over the course of a minute, they'll collect so many units of food or different units of wood or other materials that you need. That said, when you do go explore an area, you may have to fight for it. They're not just going to give you that shit for fun. There will be orcs. There will be trolls. And you need to kick their asses and hope they don't kick yours. Injuries in Regions of Ruin have lofty consequences. You better goddamn hope you learn how to use a shield.
Oh, boy.
Because if your character gets a laceration on their leg, they're going to walk slower. If your arm is broken, you're not going to do as much damage when you swing your axe. You can get a bruised sternum. You can get concussions. One of the best things about the game, and also one of the most problematic, is that you get a list of your injuries at the bottom of the screen.
Oh, no.
You know what the fuck is wrong with you. And as you're in combat and you watch that list grow, oh, that is stressful. Like, there was one time I was like, the fuck, I got a busted sternum. What do I do about my sternum? How do I fix my sternum? It was so stressful. And then I'm sitting there, like, afraid to move at all, because I'm like, if they hit me with one goddamn arrow, I'm toast. And unfortunately, it's a roguelite, so...
So you got hit with that arrow and you died.
I got hit with the arrow, I died, I got to start that shit all over again. So that was fun. And then I learned about the troubles of concussions. And then I learned about... I have had some really lengthy... Because I'm a run and gunner at heart, okay? I play a lot of Call of Duty. I want to bust down the door. I want to break somebody's face, and I want to move on. That carries over into my adventure games. I wish it didn't. Here I am. Accept me for as I am, because I'm going to bust down the door and go running at some orcs with my axe out, just hoping for the best.
I am proud of you.
It didn't do me any favors, is what I'm trying to say. You would think, knowing that the game is a roguelite and knowing how much I play roguelites, that at some point
you would get the memo.
I would learn to be at least a little more cautious. Spoiler alert, I haven't.
So proud of you.
But that said, it adds to the fun of it. It gives you a level of risk. You can't just go, oh, hey, I'm going to use the last 40 bits of food to go out here to the middle of nowhere and hope for the best. You can't do that. If you don't have food, you ain't doing shit. You're not going anywhere. You're not killing anything. It is a little traumatic that you can chop up the adorable little bouncing bunnies for food. I hit them on accident.
Sure, accident.
And it happened with my axe.
An accident.
And I chopped up bunnies, and then I was like, look, I will never run out of food as long as there are bunnies. Spoiler alert, I still ran out of food because I'm bad. You would think I would be better at this. It's surprisingly difficult. There are 4 difficulties in the game. Don't care. Even the easiest one's hard. So at least go into it knowing that you're gonna struggle and you're gonna die, and there's some the learning curve and the trial and error side of it are very steep hills to climb. But you're gonna have fun while you're doing it, as long as you don't get too upset when a concussion kills you.
Yeah. Well, then, as it stands, for $10, what do you think of Regions of Ruin?
I think for $10, there's definitely a lot there to keep it afloat, especially because you're going to die and restart 900 times. And I give it a solid buy it. Yeah.
Awesome. Next game to talk about is called Paperbound Brawlers, developed and published by Dissident Logic. It released January 10th on Xbox One for $9.99. Mind-bending gravity mechanics and a platforming brawler for up to 4 local players, characters, and arenas from classic books. Cole, tell us about Paperbound Brawlers.
So, apparently, Dissident Logic released a game called Paperbound in 2015. And Paperbound Brawlers is essentially Paperbound's definitive edition. They've beefed everything up. They've, you know, reworked character models. They've reworked the maps. It's a full-fledged remaster, if you will, while adding in a few new elements. I think they added in some new characters and gameplay modes. It is a multiplayer party game, which is why I got it. I have a built-in multiplayer party here.
Yeah, buddy.
You can play with up to 4 people locally. And you can play either a campaign or you can play as just party games. If you play the campaign, it is broken down into 5 different books, with each book consisting of a handful of different game modes that you'll want to play through. Once you complete that game mode's objective, you move on to the next. Usually, if I remember, there were around 4 to 5 different game modes in each book that you played through before you moved on to the next one. And then as you complete each book, you unlock new characters that you have available to you when you're playing just regular multiplayer. You can play the campaign mode with up to 4 people. Surprise, I just did it alone. The girls were at school and I was like, whatever, here I am. I'll play this. There are some really interesting mechanics. I'm not sure if anybody outside of the achievement community played Rataleika's Gravity Duck. But I do remember that you played it, Joe. And if you remember that you could press a button and basically invert gravity, mm-hmm. and the duck would go to the top or back down to the bottom or from side to side, right?
Yeah.
That same concept is in Paperbound Brawlers. So if you press Y and you are on the bottom, your character will invert and float up to the top, and you've inverted your character's gravity. Same if you're on the right wall, you press Y, invert, and you'll go to the left. If there are any obstacles in the middle of the map, you'll touch those first and can walk around those as opposed to floating all the way to the other side. It's a neat mechanic, especially when you are playing game modes like Capture the Quill or other objectives, because it can give you some interesting tricks to like maneuver around the other players. If you're playing in campaign, then you're playing against bots, and the bots do a lot of dumb shit. And so, like, you can just keep flipping back and forth and go right past them. And they just kind of stand there like, derp. For the objectives, for the, like, regular deathmatch type play modes, the bots are ruthless motherfuckers. And they will get you. For some odd reason, I struggled with those far more. You do have two options for weapons. You can throw a pair of scissors, because everybody's made out of paper.
Yeah.
Or you can throw a bottle of ink, which works like a frag grenade. and my artist heart just kept thinking, oh, don't waste ink. Ink's expensive. art nerd. And then you also have like a melee weapon that you can chop people up with, which is nice. It's handy. Although in some deathmatch modes, I found that didn't always count as a kill. So if you were trying to get like a set amount of kills so that you could open a tear in the page so you could get out, then like you would have to do it with the scissors or the ink in order for it to count. One mode is a King of the Hill type mode. It's Long Live the King. And the only way to kill the king is to throw an ink bottle at him. So if you don't have an ink bottle, you just got to run around over the best and not get dead until one spawns and you can grab it. It's surprisingly frantic. I didn't expect this game, even though I know it was a multiplayer game, playing it alone, I still wasn't expecting it to be like as frantic as it was. I was just like, calm down. I'm just trying to steal the quill from the AI. achievement-wise, I mean, it's a multiplayer game. You can plug up three other controllers and knock out most of the achievements really quickly without any competition.
Yeah, but that's cheap.
It is cheap. There are some achievements that are a little more difficult, and unless you're like really good at multitasking multiple controllers, then you're going to have to play against the AI anyway.
No.
So it's not a completely easy 1K, but it's on the easier side with some asterisks floating around on a few of the achievements. A lot of fun. I really like the art style. Everything looks like it's like a scribble in a book, and it's a lot of fun. Some of the levels are very unusual and feel out of place compared to the other ones.
What do you mean by that?
There's one where there's like giant horseshoes spinning around. Two big horseshoes just spinning counter to each other. And the whole game mode's premise is the AI will spawn. I was sitting there moving my fingers in circles to emulate the horseshoes, and the cat come over and started swatting at me.
Nice. You know, because you're on video and we could see what you're doing.
Yeah, I was like, well, it's habit. I talk with my hands. There's been times where I've been like, oh, I hit the mic. That's because I was sitting here recording and I flew my hands around. But it, like the horseshoe level, for example, just kind of felt out of place. The whole thing is the AI are spawning on one side, and you've got tears in the page on the other side, and you've got to stop the AI before they get in the tear. Mm. So it's supposed to be like a wave-based mode where they keep spawning and trying to get in. You chop them up so that they can't. But it, like, the mode, the game mode fits in. But I can't place why they chose horseshoes for any, like, none of the rest of the maps can justify those horseshoes being there. And it's just a little odd. And there's a couple other pages, though. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but I remember as I was playing, I was just like, why? It's just a little off. But the game as a whole, playing it with the kids was all well and good until number three started getting pissed that she couldn't kill anybody. Yeah, it's not one that I would say is suitable for younger kids. Even if they're like really good at games, they may still have trouble aiming because the aim is super weird. If you want to throw the ink, you have to hold left bumper and then you aim with the right stick, which is fine, but it doesn't actually throw it until you like flick it in that direction, to flick the stick rather than like pointing and aiming it.
Yeah.
And then say letting go to aim. There's no arc to indicate which way it's going to go. Sometimes it will bounce in odd ways. Other times it blows up on nothing and you're just like, okay. So it's a little difficult. The scissors are similar in that you push and kind of flick the thumbstick where you want them to go. And again, you don't get that aim line, so there's nothing to really assist you and help you know where it's going to end up. The plus side is you can pick up the scissors over and over again as long as nobody else picks them up. The downside is the ink is a one-time shot, unless there's some more that respawns. So if you fuck yourself, and especially in a mode like Long Live the King, where you can only kill the king with the ink.
Yeah.
Missing is kind of a bitch. those are the game modes you're gonna have to expect to replay a few times if you're trying to get through the campaign. Yeah.
Well, overall, $10. What do you think?
I give it a pretty recommended try. It could benefit with, you know, like I said, some aiming assistance or something like that. But beyond that, I think it's pretty well put together. It plays really well. It's odd. It's an odd game in general, but I think that's kind of the fun of it. You can get away with quirkier games like that when you're doing the multiplayer games. As always, I'm going to say I wish that it had some kind of online. I just enjoy when multiplayer games have online, even when I'm playing with the kids, because we have two Xboxes. And so it's kind of like, it sucks to cram everybody around the TV and pass out controller. When we could just be like, go in your room and play with me that way.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, I give it a recommended try it.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Hovership Havoc, developed and published by Snow Day Software, released January 17th on Xbox One for $9.99. Hovership Havoc is a sci-fi twin-stick shooter with third-person boss battles. Blast through rooms of a futuristic robot factory filled with robot enemies. Equip your hovership with randomly dropped abilities and upgrade your stats during and before each playthrough. Cole, tell us about Hovership Havoc.
Let's see. Roguelite, check. Twin stick, check. there's like all the ground elements here to make this game awesome. Yeah, four different ship variants. You earn gears to upgrade them individually. So if you particularly like one and you don't like the others, which I fell into, I really liked a laser shooter, and the plasma shooter was like slow with no range, and I wanted to throw my controller every time I tried to play with it. So there's another one, I forget what it's called, but it's got like a sniper variant type of shooter. Some of them are far more difficult to play with than others. But when you start the game, you choose your weapon, you choose your ship that has its weapons and stuff. All of them are upgraded individually. They level up individually. Does not matter how many times you play with the plasma. It does not upload or update or upgrade your sniper at all. None.
Yeah.
You got to play them individually. If you're going for the achievements, you've got to beat all the bosses, the whole game, with every one of the ships. So get good with it, bitches. whether you like it or not. The game's campaign boils down to three different sections. It's kind of a little odd in how it's set up. The first segment before you get to the first boss, there are three sections. And then you do the spider boss. No, it's not spider boss first, spider second. I'm sorry. Spoiler alert.
Proud of you.
It's just like a machine. It's round that throws shit at you. And like blades. I don't think it's ever given a proper name. But you'll do three levels. You go to that boss. Then for the second segment, you do two levels to go to the boss. For the third segment, you only do one level and go to the boss. As you destroy enemies, the most frequent enemy you're going to run into are like these god-awful little spiders that just swarm you. There are turrets that will pop up in some levels. There are some different mechs that will show up later on. It's relatively easy to take all these things down. Even when there are moments where like they're kind of swarming you, you will pick up power-ups that you can use to like help clear your way. You have two slots for power-ups. I'd like to say that this takes like the procedurally generated approach, but every level is the same and every time you play them, they're the same. The power-ups can be different though. They're always in the same places, but you'll get a different power-up each time. There's no consequence to leaving a power-up if you don't like it. You don't have to take it. You're not stuck with it. But you can only have two, and then you have the ability to boost a short little distance away, like as a dodge. You can't get rid of the dodge. You're stuck with it. And it's one of the most useless abilities. I have gone through this game a dozen times by now, and I never dodge. I'm just like, it gets me nowhere. It just causes me to randomly sideswipe a turret and take unnecessary damage, so I don't even fuck with it. You can upgrade. It seems like it's not consistent that it pops up every level. So the best that I can figure out is like as you go through the levels of your ship rather than like the segment level. That's a hard thing to distinguish against when you're not showing a game. So like your ship levels up, but then there are individual levels you're playing through. Sometimes after those, you'll get the ability to level up your ship. But I think that is, that upgrade segment only comes up when you've leveled up from XP and not just because you beat a segment.
Maybe.
It kind of happened erratically, and that was the best I could pinpoint down to what was happening. Because it seemed pretty consistent that if I, you know, had enough XP to level up, then I got to upgrade.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So the downside to that is that I don't know if it's a glitch. I don't know if it's intentional. I'm not entirely sure what happened, but there would be times where from segment to segment, it would not save my upgrades. So I would put in a shit ton of upgrades toward health or, you know, higher speed or more crit hits and then come back to it. And it would be like I never progressed at all.
Huh.
I'm not sure what was causing that. And I can't point, like, I don't know if it was intentional. Like, maybe I was doing something wrong. Maybe there were temporary upgrades versus permanent ones. I don't know. But I knew that if I had sat down and done a run enough that I had upgrade gears, I was putting them in and not doing anything until after I either beat it or died.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, like, this is the only way I get to keep my shit. Because if I take a break, even just to go pee, might get perilous. And I want to beat these fucking bosses. I will say, too, the path getting to the bosses, 10 times more difficult than actually beating the bosses. I have two complaints. I don't know that the bosses were all super easy. It's technically a complaint. I think it's just more of a statement of fact and like a bit of a shock. I expected some serious hardcore challenge here because I had to put so much effort into upgrading just to get to the bosses. But then once you get to them, it's like, oh, hey, I shot it in the foot for like 5 minutes and now I won. Easy peasy. Yeah. So I was a little surprised that the difficulty didn't seem to carry over into the boss fights. At the same time, hey, it's easy to beat it if I got there. Hey, kudos. I had a complaint and I lost it. What was my complaint?
I don't know. I have jelly on my shoulder distracting me.
Hi, jelly. I had a legit complaint.
Well, apparently you didn't.
The camera angle. For some reason, like, there's a top-down type of angle when you're going through the levels. But for some reason, when you're against a boss, it pulls the camera back and kind of attaches it to the ass of your ship for a more over-the-shoulder type of cam.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a horrible angle. This game just does not justify that kind of angle. Because you can't see the little spiders if they crawl up on you and they're coming up behind you. You can't see them from that angle. Or if there's a mech shooting in you in the ass, you can't see it as well. And especially if you're like cramming yourself up into a corner so you can sit there and constantly shoot the spider's foot and not take any damage. Not being able to see what's creeping up around you is a bit of a pain in the ass. I don't know why they went for that angle, but I don't like it. Besides that, though, I kept going back to Hovership Havoc. Like, I beat the shit out of it.
And we've had this one for a while.
Beat the shit out of it. And I'm like, how about one more run?
Well, then for $10, what do you say on Hovership Havoc?
I give it a try. Like I said, there's some genuine complaints, especially like with the camera angle and the difficulty and all that. But it's a solid foundation. I wish there was something to it. I can't put my finger on it, but I wish there was just something to it that made it stand out and feel a little more special. But for Rootbeer says it was a one-person studio. So, I mean, for what's there, it's a solid foundation for a roguelike twin stick spacey sci-fi shoot 'em up. Like, it's there, it's just not there, you know?
Yeah, it's just missing that something special.
Yeah, it's just wow me. But it's a good start.
Needs kittens.
Yes. Let me have a little let me have a kitten drone, a little robot kitten. That would be perfect.
Oh man. They're still attacking the wires. I have them blocked off with cardboard, and they're still trying to go after wires under my desk.
Mine are asleep on the printer.
You little shithead.
Get a spray bottle. Oh, we finally got spray bottle. We got Cass trained to the spray bottle now. It's the best thing ever, and also he hates us.
That's okay. I hate us, too.
He starts to go for something, and I just go, and he's like, ah!
You son of a bitch. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Without Escape Console Edition, developed by Bumpy Trail Games, published by East Asia Soft, released January 15th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $4.99. Without Escape is a tribute to first-person graphic adventures of the early 90s with an interactive story told through pre-rendered background and full-motion video. Explore the confines of your own home as you flip between a mundane existence and a terrifying otherworld. Are you prepared to endure the horrors that await you? It says horror, so that means you're involved. Cole, what do you think?
Yay! Oh, I love horror games. Let's just throw that right out the gate. Beginning of the new year, here's some gore. Thank you.
Hooray.
Also, it's a point and click, so that gives me two of my favorite things. Guts and pointy clicky goodness. All right there. This is how we're starting the year. I'm down for this.
Nice.
We can just do this for the rest of, like, 52 more, 51, 50, whatever number we're at for the rest of the year. Once a week, just give me a point-and-click game with some guts. And I'm like, yes.
Well, there you go, East Asia Soft. That's how you get your money for the rest of the year. Just release Without Escape, Without Escape 2, Without Escape 3, Without Escape 4, all the way up to 50.
No spoiler, but I absolutely have no idea how they could possibly do a sequel to this game. It just, it is where it is and it hits a wall. The story for this is, it starts off very vague and kind of just like, well, my parents are 200 miles away. I'm home from work early. And rather than being a typical human being, he's like, let's have a wild ass party and we'll, you know, burn the place down. He's like, I'm going to go to bed early. So you kind of lost me here because that seemed very unrealistic, but you go to bed early and a weird, inexplicable thing wakes your sleeping ass up at 2:45 in the morning. And, because this is a horror game and people are dumb, you go to investigate. As you investigate, you find yourself pointing and clicking around the house and just interacting with different objects and till you find keys and you find clues. And before you know it, you're in an alternate dimension with bodies and gore.
Your favorite things.
Yes. And yet, for some reason, you don't freak out. You just keep going on, like, clicking random shit and finding keys and solving puzzles. Perfectly logical reaction to your house being overtaken by gore in an alternate dimension. A little worried about this guy's mentality. It's fine. There's not a lot of explanation for why everything is what it is, but the guy seems weirdly okay with it all. The puzzles are pretty intuitive. There's most of it is just like I click randomly until a thing happens and then carry on. A lot of point and click games, my cat's trying to break the printer, will have you at least go into the inventory and like combine items or choose a specific item to interact with. Without Escape doesn't do that. Like if you have a glass beaker and you click on the pool of blood, you're going to have a beaker full of blood. You had no idea that you needed a beaker full of blood, but the game just gives it to you and you go on. And then you just find out when that's useful eventually when you click on something else and it's like, use beaker of blood. And I'm like, but why?
It doesn't bother me. I don't have a problem when games take some of the busy work out of it.
It takes all the busy work out. And you're just clicking. Like, click, click. Like, I imagine on PC, I would have just been like, click, 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 and just letting random shit happen all day. It was fine. I will say, for those that are into it, you can complete this game in about 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And it's not even a Rataleka.
No, that's next.
Yes. I know. But yeah, in fact, the game straight up encourages you to try to speed run it because when you beat it, it will tell you how long it took you to run through it. My best time was 26 minutes. I know there are other people who have knocked it down to about 12 to 15.
Damn.
So yeah, I mean, my first time was just blind run through and it was a 26 minute run. So it's not a lengthy game. It's not very involved. It's super easy. I would say it's maybe two steps up from a visual novel as far as difficulty goes. That's not a bad thing. I think there's a lot to be said for something that you can just sit back and click your way through and let happen.
Yeah.
And just have to solve some minor puzzles.
Especially just for $5.
Yeah, especially at the $5 price point. Like when I'm picking out a $5 game, I want that motherfucker to be easy. I pay $60 to be challenged. I pay $5 to just click my way to joy and gore.
Yes. So that said, the $5 on Without Escape, what do you think of it?
I think it's a perfectly fine fuck it, why not kind of game. Like I think fuck it, why not is kind of the category this game was made for. It's not overwhelmingly, like, it's not going to blow your socks off. It's not going to challenge you. It's not going to, like, break the mold of the type of game that you expect it to be, but it does what it wants to do very well.
And it's only $5.
And it's $5. So you get some quick gamer score. You get to, you know, have some fun in an alternate dimension of your house surrounded by gore. And you get a really weird, vague ending that you just sit there and go, where the fuck does that tie into anything that happened?
Oh, boy.
So, I'm $5. Yeah, I'm good with that. Fuck it, why not?
Cool. You mentioned Radaleika. We got one final game to talk about this week, and that is this week's Radaleika game. We have missed these in our time off.
We have. We've had to go and I had to play Devil May Cry 5 for achievements.
Hey, they took time off too, so they came back just as we came back.
I know. It's like they did it on purpose.
It's like timing.
I need to sneeze and it stuck.
What color is the pink elephant?
Pink.
You still have to sneeze?
Yes.
Okay, well then Ashley's trick fails.
Yeah, it does. When you have the hiccups, I always ask the girl, have you ever rode a white horse? And that's how I get them to stop hiccuping. Although it doesn't work for me, but it does for them. The kids are just like, what? No. But my answer is yes, so it doesn't work. Because I don't have to think about it.
You're just ruining everything tonight.
Yeah, I've actually rode horses, so it's like, well...
Anyway, final game to talk about tonight is called Red Bow, developed by Stranga Games and Grab the Games, published by Radaleika Games. It released January 14th on PS4, 15th on Xbox, 17th on Switch for $4.99. Red Bow is a top-down creepy adventure game that sets players in the role of Ro, a young girl who gets trapped in a bizarre nightmare filled with creepy monsters. Ro finds herself trapped in a strange, dark nightmare world. Help her realize what role she plays by exploring creepy environments. Cole, tell us about Ro's adventures in Red Bow.
Well, at this point, if I say much else, I'm in spoiler territory. So,
Radaleika.
Yeah. Red Bow is developed by the same one-man team responsible for other Radaleika hits, such as My Big Sister and Just Ignore Them. So the art style, the Asian influence in the horror, all of that is very prominent, and you immediately know that you're playing a Stranger game. You're like, oh yeah, I've seen this dude's shit before. And I wasn't disappointed. And you won't be disappointed with Red Bow. Number one was really into My Big Sister. I didn't get to play it much because she kind of hogged it, and then I was like, just watching barely. But I did play Just Ignore Them. I actually played Just Ignore Them and reviewed it live as I played it on the show.
I remember that one.
So I had some pretty high hopes for Red Bow because I had enjoyed Just Ignore Them so much, and then new number one enjoyed My Big Sister. And I wasn't disappointed. That kind of creepy influence of Asian horror was there. It was very prominent. You knew exactly the type of creatures and exactly the type of storytelling you were getting going into it. The pixel art is very solid. I can be really iffy with pixel art and horror. But because this is a top-down kind of view and it takes more of like little sprites as opposed to like big generic blobs that don't look like anything and kind of imply they might maybe could be blood. At least the blood is like, oh yeah, that's blood. I have a little more respect in that regard for that type of pixel art. And I can support it a little more. Ro finds herself in a nightmare scenario where she continues to wake up and interact with these less than savory mythological ghostly kind of monsters. And there are multiple ways, I'm trying not to spoil anything. There are multiple ways to approach the puzzles that these NPCs present Ro with. And surprisingly, Red Bow actually has multiple endings. So depending on how you approach those types of situations and you solve those puzzles determines whether you get a good ending, a better ending, or a bad ending. So if you do win all the achievements, you can save spam for two endings, but either way, you're going to have an extra playthrough. Mm. The interesting thing is that, sometimes you do some horrible things in this game. And they're kind of just like played off as a, oh, look what you did. You set somebody on fire and you're a little girl with a red bow. and it can be a little unnerving. But some of the stories and the characters you meet, like, I feel like I need to give a warning that there are some really sensitive topics handled in this game. They're not played lightly. They're not played for laughs. They're meant as serious topics.
Yeah, the description on the store page even says the game depicts scenes of death and suicide and is not recommended for a younger audience or those who are sensitive of the topic.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm grateful that they actually put that out there, because a lot of devs would be like, well, suck it up, Snowflake. So at least they acknowledge too that, yeah, the game has some really heavy topics in it. It's not something that you want to tread into and just think that you're going to be setting weird ghosts on fire. Even though that happens, there are other ones who are like, I had to take a break with one.
Shit gets heavy.
It does. So, that said, it's a rattle like a game. you can knock it out quick. I think it took me about an hour, 15 minutes or so to go through it. That was without a guide. I know there are guides that'll knock it out in like 30 minutes, but I, even without one, I went through it in under an hour and a half. Even with it requiring two playthroughs. So, I mean, it's a rattle like game. Enjoy your free achievements.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I do say that of Rattleika's published games, Stranger Games does really good work and is some of the more higher quality games under the Rattleika label. So that's definitely a plus.
Well, then for $5, what do you think of Red Bow?
I don't even want to, I don't want to give it a fuck it, why not? Because I think it's well worth the price. And that you're getting a good story and a good experience out of it, even though it's kind of on the short side. But I'm also like hesitant to be like, yeah, buy it, because it does have those heavier tones in it.
Yeah.
And I don't want somebody to buy it and then be like, oh, but it had this and I was traumatized and you kicked off my PTSD, and then I'd have to be like, I'm sorry.
Well, then if they heard your review, they heard the rest of it.
So just, I don't know, Joe, people skip around shit. This is a long show.
True. Well, you only have yourself to blame.
It's true. I'm long-winded. But I think I spent more time talking about Red Bow than playing it.
Oh, Jesus.
But it's... I'm going to go for the buy it, but know that there's content to be concerned with.
All right. Sounds good. Well, yeah. That is it for this review lineup. That is it for this show. Yeah, it's good to get back in the saddle and back on the horse. And
sometimes you gotta just rip again. The band-aid off and
and just throw ourselves into it and hope for the best.
You just go from like not reviewing anything to having 7 games.
It's like, how do we talk again? Like,
I don't know how to English good no mo.
You didn't know how to English good no mo to start with.
I played a lot of Devil May Cry 5. Ask me about that.
So what all did you do in your time off?
I played a lot of Devil May Cry 5.
Besides that, we covered that part.
What else? I painted some, worked. I restructured my whole shop. That was a weird thing to have time to do. That was also kind of funny because I was sitting here creating mock-ups for the shop. And then, like, as soon as I would upload it, then David was on one laptop and he would go in and, like, set the pricing structures for everything. And then he would save it. And then when he was done, number one was on her laptop. So it was like an assembly line editing the store. And she would, like, go in and put in tags and descriptions because she spells better than her dad. And so he wasn't allowed to do that part. So, but, like, he could do the math. So he could go in and put in the prices and shit. And so it was, like... 4 days we just sat here and went through everything in my shop, got rid of stuff that wasn't selling well and replaced it with some new stuff. And so that and Devil May Cry and The Sims was basically my vacation, and I'm not mad about it.
Oh, we'll have to do it again one of these years.
Yeah, I guess, you know, December I can have a life again for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
In the meantime, here we are.
Yeah, in the meantime, you're fucking stuck with us. So,
recording on my birthday, or are we going to, like, do that on the
When's
Friday?
Your birthday?
On the 6th. It's coming up. It's right around the corner. It's Thursday.
It is right around the corner. Well, we could pick a different day that week.
Okay. That was like Joe's going to make me work on my birthday.
we'll figure it out. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I could be dead by then, as my mom would say. I could be dead and buried by then.
Rubier says the pedo stuff in My Big Sister was too much. Yeah, that one, it had really strong tones too.
Good stuff. All right, well, that is it for this episode. Cole, do you have any final words to end it before we play some music and then subject people to this all again next week?
Nope, see you next week, bitches.